Welcome to Wake Up and Pay Attention, the podcast fueling positive change from the inside out. I'm Mark Robertson, your host. With over 25 years as a professional coach, I'm thrilled to explore the personal growth tools that have helped me and hundreds of people just like you design and awaken to their best life. If you've ever felt overwhelmed and unfulfilled, like you're just going through the motions day after day, maybe you're afraid one day all the balls are going to drop, you're in the right place. Together, let's expand our self-awareness and make sustainable shifts that improve our communication skills, relationships, and overall well-being. This is a judgment-free zone where openness, understanding, and support rule. So grab your headphones and get ready. It's time to wake up and pay attention. Hello, and welcome back to Wake Up and Pay Attention. I'm really excited for episode 7 today. It's going to be a really deep, rich episode, actually going to be one of multiple episodes around the same concept. And so really excited to bring it to you today and continue our conversation with one another. A few things as I open. One is with regard to my voice. It's springtime here in Nashville, and that usually means allergies, and I've kind of had the head and chest crud over the last week. And so if my voice sounds different, I apologize for that, but I really want to get this particular episode out to you. Also want to touch on the delay. At least it's been a delay for me and maybe for you if you've been waiting on this episode. I've had a couple weeks where work was really busy, devoted some full days to a conference with Newfield Network, which was really powerful. And then last week I was sick, as I mentioned, with this stuff. And so just now getting to it, but I'm excited to finally get here. And probably even more so, if I'm being authentic with you and being honest with you, is that this is a topic that I've really been wrestling with a lot over the last few weeks. Really a lot of thoughts swirling around in my head as to how to present this one to you. What's the best way to lay it out? How do we build upon it as we lay this out? And so that's been tricky. And the reason is it's such a deep and rich and meaty topic. You will see once we get into it today that this one can go in so many different directions, and it's going to have so many different aspects to it that it's hard to get started and hard to really figure out what I want to focus on. But I think I've figured that out today. And so I'm excited. As I mentioned, this will be a multi-episode topic that we're going to be covering, and I'm really excited to get to it today. Finally, as we open, I got some timely feedback actually today on the podcast. And by the way, for everyone that's offered feedback, thank you so much. It's been humbling again, incredibly powerful, and I'm just wowed by it. But I got some timely feedback from my old college buddy, Scott, today. And he said this, so I wanted to share it with you and tie it to what we've been talking about. He said, your podcast really makes me think and then want to take action. So keep assigning the homework and keep bringing the practical examples, because I really like those. And so it made me think about, this is the essence of what I'm trying to do with the podcast, is I want to make you think. So I want to share new concepts, a new framework that has you stop and reflect and generate some new thinking for you. And then out of that, it will likely expand how you see your world, your reality, and then you're going to be inspired usually to take a new action. Literally, a new action will show up for you that probably wasn't there before. And then it's up to you to put that into practice. And as we talked about, learning is time and practice. So practicing that will be important if you want to create growth. I loved Scott's feedback because it really helped me realize I'm hitting the mark. That's the mark I'm looking for with you, is to provoke new thinking and inspire you to take new action. So it's always validating to get feedback like that. And actually, that kind of moves us into our topic today, because it's at the core of feedback. But not only that, it's at the core of so much more of what's going on, I think, in our world today. And I would say so much of what we're suffering with, so much of the drama and so on. I'll talk about that a little more here in a second. So to begin today's conversation, I want to remind you of the three circles we talked about in a previous episode. Human beings, we are bundles of language, emotion, and body. That's what I've been calling our way of being, the observer that we are. So today we're going to take a deeper dive back into language. And the way that I'm going to do that is I'm going to introduce you to two of the most powerful speech acts that I mentioned before. These are called assessments and assertions, and I want to begin sharing ideas about how these play out in our lives, both in ways that I think are really helpful and empowering and work really well, and then oftentimes in ways where we suffer and that are disempowering, cause us a lot of challenges. And so today, what I want to do is I want to cover first is just the basic fundamental distinction by giving you a couple sentences and contrasting those two. And then if we have time, I want to then explore what I think are three key aspects in terms of the way that we apply this or use this in our lives and in a way that often will create suffering for us, which is a lot of what I'm trying to do here in this podcast is help eliminate the unnecessary suffering in your lives. And so, again, I said, if we have time, because this conversation is going to stretch about assessments and assertions over multiple episodes. So I'm going to monitor the time. We'll see where we get today. And as I mentioned before, and I want to reiterate, the challenge with talking about this topic is I think it has so many tentacles into our day-to-day lives. It's underneath so much of our suffering in life. I think our upset for ourselves and our upset and challenges in our relationships, the drama, I think, in our culture is deeply rooted in this concept, which you'll get here in a minute. I think the fundamental tensions between people, this concept is rooted in that. So it has so many tentacles into our day-to-day lives that I think it's just time we launch into this. And I want to equip you with new language tools to start noticing what's happening here and hopefully, more importantly, to begin to shift this. So let's begin. The way that I introduce this language distinction is between these two speech acts is to give you two sentences. Okay, here they are. I am a man, I am stupid. And then to ask the question, what's the difference between these two statements? And historically, if I have any women in the audience of a workshop, when I show these two sentences, I'm a man, I'm stupid, what's the difference? They often will start laughing and say, there is no difference, move on. It's obvious, right? Which is, let's bring some levity, which I think is kind of nice. But when I really ask people, so really, what is the difference? Grammatically, they're the same. They start with I am, but then they branch out with just a key word, but it's hugely different. And we need to understand that. And we need to begin to hold them separate in our thinking and in our conversations. So again, the sentences are, I am a man, I am stupid. The difference is many people will say is one's a fact, one's an opinion. Sometimes they'll say one's subjective, one's objective. Sometimes they'll say one's reality and the other is perception, that kind of thing. So all those words are correct. For today's conversation, let's go with this. Probably the most understandable way to talk about it is I am a man is a fact. I am stupid is an opinion or a judgment. And so I want to also say right now, I'm mindful of the time in which I'm introducing this with, you know, we have conversations about gender identification and that sort of thing. But I wanted to introduce it in the way that I learned it 30 years ago. And I don't want you to get caught up in that notion and miss the point. So the point here, I think, is understanding the difference between factual statements and opinions. So let's talk about the first statement. I am a man. It's called a fact. We call these assertions. So what are some other assertions? I am 5 foot 11 and a half inches tall. What's the nature of assertion? So let's talk about that right now. Things like I am 5 feet 11 inches tall. I weigh 206 pounds. I live at this address. I drive this car. I own my own business could be an assertion. It's 74 degrees outside and I live in Nashville, Tennessee. There are men, there are women in the room sometimes. So these are assertion statements. So what's the nature of an assertion? They can be proven true or false by all observers. So these kinds of statements we're calling facts strip out the difference in the way that we see things, which is something we fundamentally talked about in one of the other episodes, is that we're all unique observers. I see what I see based on my history, my background, all the factors that have shaped my life, and it's not 100%. I'll never find another observer on the planet that's 100% like you, like myself. And so this is what I talk about when I say the simple expression, if you're ever in a relationship, you realize we don't see things the same way. assertion, strip that out. We can all measure the assertion. When I make an assertion in life, I should be able to provide evidence that it's true or it's false. And so it is the objective statements of our life. These are factual statements. Hopefully that makes sense. So when we talk about the power of language, like we did the first episode, I said language is generative and creative, not just passive and descriptive. This really is the passive and descriptive element of language. We make an assertion about something and it's describing it and it just kind of sits there. Really doesn't affect the future. And I'll talk about that a little more when we transition over to the other statement. So those are assertions, factual statements. Let's shift gears to the other sentence, I am stupid, because this is the more powerful one. This is the one that we're using that we often don't see how we're using it that's creating a lot of messes. So I am stupid or I'm smart. These are opinions. These are judgments. These are perceptions. These are interpretations. So the fact might be it's 74 degrees in Nashville. The assessment is it a good day or is it a bad day? Is it beautiful weather or is it nasty weather? Those are assessments. Words like stupid, smart, is this person fat or are they skinny? Are they an extrovert? Are they an introvert? Do they have confidence or do they lack confidence? Are they arrogant? Are they assertive? Or are they too laid back? Or are they a pushover? All of these are assessment words. And so I want to contrast these with assertions in a couple different ways. Remember, we said that assertions always provable true, false. Assessments are never true or false. They can't be. They always depend upon the person making them. They always depend upon the person that's observing. You and your friend might be listening to this podcast in your car and you finish the episode and you go, man, that was fantastic. That was the best episode ever. And your friend goes, that was terrible. I liked episode 2 much better. This one was awful. What's the truth? The truth is it was just episode 7. One observer sees it as fantastic. One sees it as awful. There isn't a truth about it. It's just two different observers drawing two different assessments. Where assertions are measurable and objective, assessments are not measurable. They are subjective. This is the gray area in life. Again, they're never true or false. They always depend upon the observer making them. However, what's one of the key aspects to assessments is where assertions are descriptive and kind of sit there, assessments could be regarded as one of our most generative aspects, creative aspects of language, because they move us into the future with others. They move us into the future with ourselves. The way you assess yourself and others starts to bring forth an identity or a way of looking at someone that generates a future with them. And often we sort of tunnel into that way of assessing ourselves or others, and we miss a whole lot of other evidence, a whole lot of other behavior. And I'll try to explain this more as we go. But for now, a few other thoughts about assessments. Human beings are assessment machines. We're judgment machines. That's what we do. We judge. And I'm not saying that we can stop doing this. I'm not offering that. It's really kind of constitutive of who we are as human beings. We're language beings. We will always assess. In fact, I would say you have to assess in order to do life. It's just begin to notice how we're assessing. And in a way, it's like, is that working for you or not working for you in the way that I'm assessing myself and others? For example, if you're married, you had to assess all the people that you didn't marry up to this point as that's not the person. And then you assess this one as this is the person. Those are assessments. You have to assess on a simplistic level. Is it safe for me to cross the street right now? And we assess and away we go. If it is or it isn't, you had to assess to take the job that you took, the career you're taking. We're constantly assessing. It's just start to notice how you assess. And that there's a lot to be learned in that. I think as we move through the world day in, day out, we're assessing. Sometimes it's negative, which is an assessment in and of itself. Sometimes it's positive. You know, start to notice the assessor that you are. Do you tend to make lots of negative, critical assessments and judgments about yourself and other people? Or do you tend to have a different flavor, more of an assessment of the positive? I see the positive in things. That's fundamentally about the observer that you are. Human beings are assessment machines. We can't stop, but we need to start noticing because they have power to shape the future. That's the key piece that I want you to understand. They have huge power. And for us, one of the ways I was trained, one of the most powerful aspects of assessments is what we call a linguistic trap. So what does that mean? That means we assess, we assess, we assess. And then the moment you begin to collapse these two assessments and assertions, and you hold your assessments as if they're an assertion, as if they're the truth, you're stuck or the other person is stuck. We often put other people in a box they can't get out of because we begin assessing them early on. We assess them similarly, often in a negative way, sometimes positive and negative. And we put them in a box they can't get out of because it starts to funnel the way we look at them. And every encounter we have with them now, we want to validate our previous assessment. And y'all listen, we do the same thing with ourselves. And the dangerous ones, I'll just say to you right now, are the negative assessments we hold about ourselves and over time begin to think they are the truth, or the negative ones we hold about other important people in our lives and begin to believe they are the truth as well. It literally orients us to the world in a different way. So I called this a linguistic trap. It's one of the powerful things we do is collapsing assessments and assertions. And so there are ways to characterize the kind of person that does that. And so there are expressions like this that I've often used. How many of you know the person that's my way or the highway? The way I see it is the way it is. And the way you see it, unfortunately, is wrong. I often bring my father back into the conversation, a really defining relationship. I often have spoken and assessed him and spoken about him as one of the most self-righteous human beings I've met on the planet. And I say that not as strongly as I used to, but it's a characterization. I assess him that way because my father's primary commitment, I believe, in life was to be right. And so self-righteous people, I think, are doing this collapsing a lot, holding their assessments, their view of things, as if it's the truth or the facts. I remember I would have a conversation with him and he might listen and he'd say, well, Mark, look, the reality of the situation is this. And he would present his assessment as if it were the truth. And there's something that happens. There's something that's generated there in relationships with other human beings. When you have a tendency to do that all the time, you think your way is the right way and others are wrong. It's a huge cost to this, okay? And so I'm going to expand on that a little more later, but I want you to start to get this idea. And I want to paint a picture for, like, how are assertions just sitting there, not really impacting the future, but assessments heavily impact the future. I'll give you a couple examples. One, let's imagine you meet someone new and you meet them, you come into a meeting with them. Let's imagine you're at work or you're in a social setting and you get introduced to someone and you meet them. Guess what we do? We start assessing. That's what we do. Or sometimes we're so worried about how they're assessing us. We're having a private conversation with ourselves, assessing ourselves negatively, and we're not even present in the conversation. But let's imagine we're able to do that. And we start assessing the other person and I meet, let's say, Susie, and I think, wow, she's nice and she seems friendly, but wow, a few times there, she seemed a little bit hard-headed and stubborn and a little bit rude in terms of our interaction. And I go away in the social setting and I meet other people or I hang out with my friends or I leave the meeting. And then a few days later, let's say I run into Susie again at work or at home and I have interactions with her and all of a sudden there it is again. There's that kind of stubbornness, that hard-headedness, and there she was being rude again. And what starts to happen is because we're patterning our assessments is now I'm going to start looking at Susie a certain way, and in every future encounter, I'm going to start looking to validate that assessment that I've made. And I might miss other evidence. And maybe more dangerously, what I was talking about is if I do the linguistic trap, I put her in a box, is I hold my assessments now after a couple encounters as if they are the truth about her. And then maybe more dangerously, if anybody ever stops and asks me, what do you think of Susie? I say, this is who she is and this is the way that she is. So I'm speaking my assessments and telling this person, this is a fact about her. This is the way she is and it's not. So that's what I meant about How often have you assessed people in your life similarly over a couple of encounters, or maybe just the first encounter, and you put them now in a box that they can't get out of because you hold that as the truth about them? That's your picture of them. And then more dangerously, you might go start sharing that with other people as if that's the way they are. And you preload the other person to assess them that way when they meet them. That's at the heart of prejudice. And we'll talk about that at some point in the future as well. So I'm branching into a few different areas, but I think you get the sense. I want you to start noticing, am I assessing here, judging, or am I asserting? Is it a fact? And start holding them separate. That's the very first step here, is we've got to see the difference. Never collapse them and hold them as separate. It can dramatically change the way we have conversations with others and the way we have conversations in our head with ourselves. Because if you think about it, to build on this, who's the person we often assess the most? Ourselves. And who's the person we often negatively assess the most? Ourselves. We're often harder on ourselves and speak to ourselves in ways that we would never allow other people to. And there's a cost to this, y'all. We suffer because of this. So I'll give you another example relating to others assessing us, but also how we assess ourselves. It's a story I heard when I learned this. It's called the Little Johnny story. So imagine you're Little Johnny and you're in third grade math class and you're sitting there. You've had a rough night. You're tired and you're rambunctious. You've got a lot of energy you're trying to burn off. So you're making a lot of noise, talking out loud, interrupting thing. And finally, the teacher says, Little Johnny, you always do this. You're always behaving stupidly. That's enough. I've had it. Go to the principal's office. That's it. I'm done. Send you to the principal's office. And you mope down to the principal's office. You walk in and Little Johnny, and the principal sees you and says, Little Johnny, what stupid thing have you done now? Why are you sitting here in my office yet again? And you tell your story, and they've already talked to your teacher, and they're like, look, I've had it. Can't handle this stupidness. You got to go home. So you get sent home. This is a makeup scenario, obviously, but stay with me. You get sent home and you're at home and you have an older sister. She's not home yet. And you think, I want to go in there and get her iPod and play some music. So you go get it and you're playing music and she comes home and she's looking for her iPod. She can't find it. She comes in your room. Little Johnny, she sees that you have the iPod. You stupid little kid. Give me my iPod. Get out of here. Wow. Tough day. The day continues. Your mom and dad get home and they're preparing dinner and you think, wow, it's been a rough day. I'm going to try to help. So you're helping in the kitchen, and then all of a sudden you happen to be carrying a plate from the kitchen to the dining room table and you drop it. Plate shatters, food spills everywhere. Your mom's had a rough, Little Johnny, how could you do something so stupid? Clean it up and we'll figure out what we're going to do for dinner. Maybe your dad chimes in. God, here we go. Yet again, doing that thing you do, that stupid thing. I'm being dramatic here, but there are different versions of this, but you get where I'm going. Now let's imagine you actually happened to graduate from high school, but you've been hearing that same message or some version of that for years and years. Now you graduate from high school, you go to work, let's say, get a job, and you decide, I'm going to do the best I can. You're working hard, and you are working hard, and you realize that, hey, your supervisor of your department left, and they're going to hire a new supervisor. And they say, we want to promote from within. If you think you're qualified, put in your application. Will you ever put in your application? Nope. Why? Because you're stupid. Because you're holding an assessment like it's the truth, because it's a message you heard over and over again in life. And it went from maybe others saying that to you to now you're saying it to yourself. Holding the assessment of I'm stupid. I can't possibly apply for the leadership position because I'm stupid. And if I do, everyone will find out. Okay? And so that's the cost, that's the danger of this, is it plays out into the future. So words like assessment, words like stupid or smart, are you shy? Are you extroverted? All these are beliefs we have in our head, assessments we make about ourselves, and then we hold them to be the truth, and they get in the way of our taking action in life that we may want to take because we now continually self-assess. And we trap ourselves and we don't take the action we want in our life. We suffer with it. So I think that example makes sense. So what am I saying about assessments and assertions? We have to be willing to keep and start to keep them separate from one another. They're not the same. We have to notice how we've been talking to ourselves, and those negative things you've thought were the truth about you that can't be changed have never been the truth. And you can change, you can grow, and that we'll talk about ways to do this in future episodes. But first, we have to keep them separate. Now, quick point. What is the relationship between these two assessments and assertions where I say don't collapse them? Well, here's the relationship. They actually can marry together quite helpfully, where we say assertions are always provable true or false. Assessments are never true or false. They're either grounded or ungrounded. So what does that mean? A well-grounded assessment means you notice how you assess yourself and you have facts, assertions, to support that. You can literally give me measurable, provable actions or behaviors or data that supports either a positive or a negative assessment. That's considered a well-grounded assessment. An ungrounded assessment often is what we'll find, especially in our negative assessments about ourselves, because we just assessed it somewhere along the way, we held it to be the truth, and there's often one data point, one factual event in our life, or maybe none, but it's an assessment we've made and we're holding on to it like it's the truth. That's called an ungrounded assessment. A lot of times as a coach, my role with my clients is personally and professionally is to help them examine their assessments and realize which ones are really ungrounded, and it loosens things up. It gives them a freedom to start to hold. There's no fixedness anymore. They don't think anymore, wow, this is who I am. It's the way it is and it'll never change. They begin to realize there's possibility for growth here because they realize it's an ungrounded assessment. So another key point, be willing to update your assessments about yourself or others at any time, especially about others, but even yourself. When given evidence of new behavior in others, which requires you to step back and expand how you're viewing the other important people in your life, be willing to get off your assessment, loosen its hold, and update it when it's warranted. And many of us struggle. We literally don't know how to update our patterned habitual way of thinking about others and ourselves, our patterned habitual way of assessing, because we haven't had this distinction up until now. So I think it just can be incredibly freeing to see the difference and understand there is opportunity here to hold them separate. I can update my assessment at any time about others and myself and help generate literally a new reality or a new future. So I hope that way of painting the picture makes sense. There's so much more I'll say about it in other episodes, but let me touch on what I think are three key aspects of this that I want to talk with you first about, probably because they've been really powerful and impactful in my life. They're not necessarily the right order. Again, not an assertion, but I just think they're powerful to introduce now. So the first one is related to this piece I've been talking about with the language trap. The moment we look at things, we assess, and we hold it to be the truth. There's something bigger than just that instance going on in our culture, and I think in some other cultures, but it's very characteristic of the American culture. And it's like a larger, we call it a background conversation, a background soup of language that's going on for Americans. It's almost like we grew up in it. We may not have even been taught it, but it just gets in our bones by virtue of the fact that we are Americans. We grow up in it, and it's called this. It's called the I'm right background conversation. Or another version of it you may have heard before is I'd rather be right than happy. It's the classic case of where we hold our assessments as if they're right. And if others have a different one than us, we make them wrong. They are wrong. Okay. And so literally the way I was taught this, this is a killer conversation. We literally are killing each other. We go to war and we kill people. It's been going on for centuries, give you plenty of examples, but it's also happening today, I think, and most likely in the Israeli-Palestinian issue, is both sides are convinced they're right and the other is wrong, and they're willing to kill one another for it. I think it's almost at the root of any time we've ever warred with one another, we kill other human beings, is often there's this, I'm right, you're wrong. So it's a huge background conversation, particularly Americans and probably other cultures are rooted in, and we may talk more about why it is, but it's a killer conversation. It's dangerous. Even we hold it this way about ourselves. This is the right way to think or the wrong way to think. This is the right way to act or the wrong way to act. again, it's making an assessment about a gray area, a gray territory, not factual territory, but subjective territory, and putting the right and wrong template on it, and it traps us. I'll talk about that a little more in a second. So here's a catchy saying I heard. So as it relates to this concept and relationships, you can be right or you can be in relationship, but you can't have both. That was the cost with my father. Is he was, in my experience, a very righteous person. He and I were very different observers of the world. We saw things very differently, which is fine. It happens. But his commitment to being right all the time made me wrong constantly when I would offer my perspective on things. And eventually, I just stopped offering. I shut down. I got quiet because I didn't want to be made wrong anymore. And I think most of us don't want to hang out with other people that make us wrong all the time. We just don't. So talk about it these days. If our goal in relationship is to connect with others, feel close or understanding or get along with others, this I'm right, you're wrong conversation won't work. It's a killer conversation. Didn't work with me and my father. And so I'm especially attuned to that these days. I do my best not to be righteous or be right about things, but I also get trapped in it from time to time. I got trapped in it in my marriage with my ex-wife at times because it just, that's the soup I grew up in my family, and it got on me. I think many of us have realized in some ways we become our parents over time, and we start doing some of the very same things we couldn't stand about them because it's in us if we don't pay attention. So another piece that I touched on as it relates to this piece is just this right, I call it the right wrong template. What I've noticed in our culture is when I work with my clients, especially often their hesitation, their struggles, their challenges or issues is around, I don't want to do the wrong thing, or I want to do the right thing. I don't want to do the wrong thing, or they're in relationships and they're getting made wrong, or they're making other people wrong. And usually what I'll discover is the territory we're talking about is all gray area. It's subjective. And so in a way, what I'm saying is any assessments you have are legit and valid. They come from the observer that you are. I'm not saying that they're the best or other people don't have better ones than you. I'm just saying they are legit and valid assessments, but they are never right or wrong. They're never the truth. And so to have your thinking or your speaking or the way you interact with others, when you put the right wrong template on top of assessments, it kills things. It creates a trap. It creates a lot of suffering. So I often will say to my clients, I think you're using a template that won't work to help you get out of this situation. It won't help us in our coaching conversation to help you come up with an answer that you want, an action you want to take to solve this or potentially solve it. It won't help you in your thinking, but because it'll just trap you. We're using a template and applying it to an area where it doesn't apply. Right, wrong can be applied to assertions, factual stuff, right? And we often say, notice these days, Americans, we are quick to say, right, that's our way of validating. But like 2 + 2 = 4, that's an assertion. It's a true assertion and it's right. 2 + 2 = 5, that's a false assertion. It's wrong. So right, wrong applies there, but it doesn't apply in what's the best way to behave here? What's the best way to treat someone? What's the best product to buy? What's the best way to do this thing or that thing? I think you get where I'm talking about. It doesn't apply to that situation. It's all assessment land. The last thing I'll say about this one is just if you look at what's going on in our culture, and I think about TV shows that I've watched at times or debate shows or talk shows. In my view, my assessment is they typically will get two very different observers to come on and talk about a controversial topic, both being righteous about their perspective, and they'll turn them loose and they'll just prompt them with something triggering and let them go. And the conversation just devolves into, I'm right, you're wrong. No, I'm right, you're wrong. And that conversation takes us nowhere. I think this is at the heart of our inability in our culture, probably politically and in other arenas, to solve some of our deeply entrenched issues that are around gray territory, is because both sides are dug in and more committed to being right than they are to resolving things, connecting, coming together, and working things out. And we could talk about many different arenas where this shows up. But for now, I just want you to see the power of this first aspect of this background conversation and soup we're swimming in that I think causes a lot of suffering. So I invite you to look at, are you that person? Are you doing that in your own life with others? And maybe it's time to stop. Maybe it's time to understand, wait a minute, I've got my view, they've got theirs. This hasn't worked for me to make them wrong, and it's time for me to start asking better questions and start deeply listening. And maybe most importantly, it's time to notice how critically you are at assessing yourself and begin to separate these and begin to change the conversation you're having with yourself. Okay. So that's the first of the three key pieces. The second one is this. Assessments, as I said, are never true or false. They have an aspect of them about authority. What do I mean by that? Who do you give authority to assess you in your life? Now, another more common way to say that is, whose opinions, judgments about you do you give weight? Do you grant weight? And then how do you act based on that? So we talk about it in terms of whose opinions do you grant authority? So when I talk about this, I like to paint a visual picture. Imagine a horizontal line, just a short horizontal line. And on the left end of the line is 0%. And on the right end of the line is 100%. So meaning on the left side, if you're so 0% all the way on a spectrum to 100%, all the percentages in between. So start on the left side. If you give 0% of people's assessments authority, it means basically you don't give a shit what anybody else thinks. You give nobody's opinion any weight. You won't consider it. You're going to do what you're going to do, and that's it. And so we might assess or characterize that person as self-absorbed, narcissistic, arrogant. There are a lot of different assessment words we can make about that. Someone who gives nobody else's opinion any weight. We go all the way to the other end, which is dangerous, I believe, my assessment. I think we've seen examples of this. We go all the way to the other end, someone who gives 100% of other people's authorities, assessments authority. Now, what's happening there? Here I am moving through my day, and I encounter my friend, and they say, your hair looks ridiculous. And I go, oh my gosh, I better go back to the house and change my hair. And then I'm back out in the day, and someone says, that's the wrong soft drink to drink. And I'm having lunch with somebody, and they say, that's clearly the wrong soft drink. And so I throw it away, and I go get a different one. Or I run into someone later and they say, you know, that's absurd the way that you're doing that or the way that you said that. And I'm giving them full authority. Their opinion has all the weight. Now I've got to go change. I've got to go immediately stop doing what I was doing and go do something different. I hope this makes sense. But it's like you're giving everyone's opinion weight. So as you move through your day, because everybody's a different observer and you're going to get different opinions, you're going to be swaying in the wind. We might characterize this person as a doormat, a pushover, someone who gives everybody else's opinion weight and then acts upon it. They have no sense of their own self and their own assessments and stand in their own assessments about themselves. And it's okay to stand strongly in your opinions. It's just make sure, as I said before, that you've examined it and they have some grounding. You have facts to back them up. You can have some conversations to share your assessments. Support them with your perspective, invite and listen to other people's assessments, ask them to ground theirs, and then we can have a healthy, productive conversation, hopefully to reach a resolution. But as it relates to who you grant authority, if you're all the way 100%, you're screwed, truly. I mean, it's going to be a rough lifetime. So I ask the question, I think both ends are dangerous. Where do you want to be? Whose opinion do you want to let matter? And so many people will initially go right in the middle. I would say, I don't think so. My experience in life has been, I want to actually be further down to the left side, closer to zero. I think maybe granting 10 to 15% of the people in your life's assessments, inviting them and granting them authority, people you trust that you think are good observers, and you want to know their opinion. So you're choosy about who you invite feedback from, not everybody. Because look, we live in a culture of tons of assessments. Everybody's going to have their opinion, their judgment, and it's just that. It's never the truth. So it's like, be choosy. So what am I saying about what I've discovered for myself and the very confident people I've met in life? They're well grounded in their own assessments, their own self-assessments about themselves. They have very well grounded assessments, a lot of facts to back them up about who they are, who they're not. They have a confidence about themselves, what they can do, what they can't do, the kind of person they are, what they bring to themselves and relationships, and the kind of person they're not. And they're usually open to talking about it. They're often very transparent and authentic. So they're choosy. They don't disregard anybody's feedback, but they are choosy about the feedback they invite. And when they do, they seriously consider it, okay, in terms of how they're showing up to other people, and especially significant people, and it might be time to make a change. So that's the second key piece I wanted to talk with you about. Maybe it's time to look at who you've been granting authority and change that up. I literally have met people who are in their 40s and 50s, and they're still granting their 70 and 80-year-old parents authority to assess them in areas that they're not qualified. And so they're generating drama, upset, they're suffering, they're changing their lives. There's just a lot of upset because they're giving too much authority to people in their lives. Maybe it's time for you to take back some of that authority, so to speak. And the last piece, I know we're getting a little lengthy here, but I want to finish this up. We have more time to discuss this later. But the third piece is the idea of stories. So what do I mean by that? Human beings are assessment machines. As I said, we constantly assess. You won't stop doing that. But what we tend to do is over time, we assess ourselves or others, and we start to weave those assessments together into a story about ourselves or other people. We just do it. It's our way of making sense, putting things in certain places, but we start to make up a story about ourselves and others. And that, again, that story, because it's mostly assessments, will have a future impact. It will shape things. It will affect things. So we're storytelling beings. We make up stories. It's important. Talk about leaders are really good storytellers. They create powerful stories in which people can follow them and thrive and create great action. But stories are at the heart of whether we thrive or we suffer. So start noticing again, what are the stories? What's the story you're living in about yourself? What's possible in your life? What isn't possible? Who you are, who you're not. Another way to think of a story is your narrative. That's a common word people use. Well, what's the narrative you have about yourself or other people? And again, one of the most dangerous things we can ever do is weave together assessments into a story to make sense of things and then hold that like it's the truth about that person or ourselves, because then we're stuck. Then change is not possible. So I invite you to look, have you been telling powerful stories about yourself, others in your life, what's possible, what's so in the present? Or have you been living in some disempowering stories, some stories that you've trapped yourself and closed possibilities? Is it time to examine the story you've been telling and update that story to a more grounded, empowering story so you can move forward in life, take more effective action, okay? And so I'll kind of wrap this piece up with this notion I've often thought of when I'm talking about stories and how we tell stories, that in a way, our life is a blank sheet of paper. You've got the pen. You're writing the story. You're writing the assessments. Do you want to write? You are the age you are. You have a past. You can't change it. But what's the story you want to tell about your past up till now and your future? You're writing it. You get to decide what you write on that piece of paper. That's how language comes into play. So how about writing a grounded, authentic, and empowering story? Doesn't mean bad things haven't happened, as opposed to a disempowering story that will cause you to suffer. That's my point. And I think I mentioned it earlier. I'm not sure, but in many ways, I think of coaching, really good coaches are story busters. We invite our clients to talk about their challenges and issues. We listen to their stories. We draw out their stories, and then we parse them. We have them take a look at them and see which part of the story are you creating that is helpful and which part do we want to update and let go of. So I like the notion that in many aspects, coaches are story busters, and that's often where the growth is in our coaching, is in helping clients change their story to a more empowering story, but also stories that are grounded in facts. This isn't rose-colored glasses. This isn't dismissing the facts of your life. It's blending them with the assessments and stories of your life in an authentic way that you can grab a hold of and embrace so that it has you be more powerful in your life. So I think I want to stop there. We're well into the episode today. So let me give you just a quick summary of key points. We made the distinction of an assessment, a judgment, opinion, and an assertion, a fact. Assertions are always true, false, kind of sit there, don't do much for the future. Assessments, never true, false, always depend upon the observer making them, but have a huge impact on the future, are incredibly powerful. Humans are assessment machines, so maybe it's time to be willing to examine and update your assessments. We also talked about a version of that when we hold our assessments as if they're assertions with the larger background conversation, particularly in America, but other countries, of I'm right, or I'd rather be right than happy. It's a killer conversation. Remember what I said, you can be right or you can be in relationship, but you can't have both. And I know that's a cliche, but I think it lands for people. We then talked about who do you give the authority to assess you or judge you? Look, people are going to assess you. They always have and they always will. Don't be afraid of their assessments because they're never the truth. Do not be afraid of anybody else's assessment about you because it's not speaking to your truth or the truth of who you are. It's just their experience of you and the way they've assessed or judged you. Just be choosy about whose assessments you invite about you and be more well-grounded in your own self-assessments. That's where I find I've been more confident in my life, and others that I think are confident are really well-grounded in who they are and who they're not. And the last piece is stories. The weaving of assessments together into a story. Is it time to examine your story and alter part of it or a lot of it in a way that would be more empowering for you? Are some aspects of it disempowering and not working for you and holding you back in life or getting in your way or you're suffering? And is it time to shift it? It's time to rewrite the story. So that's it. Those are the key points. So your homework, what's your homework? I like to offer homework is step one. Now you have the distinction of an assessment versus an assertion. Start to notice how these show up in your thinking, in your speaking, and even probably more so in how others are using them. And don't do the language trap. Like, hold them separately. My clients talk sometimes about literally using the lingo of, they go from not saying anything when they offer their opinion or being righteous about it to using the words, in my assessment, this is what I think about this thing. In my view, this is what I think about this thing. But you may have a different one. I'd love to hear yours. So literally just using the wording, the language of in my assessment, they have remarked for years how that changes their conversations with themselves and more importantly with others, loosens a hold, and it opens up an ability to communicate that's much better. Another piece of homework might be, here's an assignment for you. Reflect and write down, what are your top three assessments you have about yourself? We might call those your strengths. What are your top three negative assessments? We might call those your weaknesses. And now, can you see that none of those are the truth about you? They never have been. Maybe someone negatively assessed you along the way frequently and you gave it great authority and now you believe it's your biggest weakness and it's true and it never has been. So it's time to loosen the hold of it. You can actually start to shift these in the future. Another thing I'll offer you as homework is maybe now that you know this is practice talking to yourself more positively day in, day out. See if you can't both notice how you've been assessing, but then start assessing yourself more caring with more grace over these next few weeks. Be more positive with your language. I want to close with this idea. Look, human beings aren't broken and they don't need to be fixed. They're not. We aren't like things that break and need to be fixed. Those are linguistic terms we've used that I think trap us in terms of what's possible in our life. We just need to learn to use language more responsibly, understanding assessments, assertions, working with that more powerfully so we can see our greatness, actually, that I believe is in everybody. We can wipe off some of the stories, the mud of the stories that we've layered on over our lifetime and open up some new possibilities for our lives. And there may be areas where we assess and we realize that's not who I want to be. And so we go about making change so we thrive. Okay. So that's it for today. We will build on this with more in future episodes, but I just want to wrap with the thought that I often will wrap with, and then a closing sort of thought. Be well over the next couple of weeks. Practice in whatever way fits for you. Be gentle with yourself. Be gentle with your assessments of yourself. Maybe be willing to update your assessments about others in your life. You have relationships where they're not where you want them to be. Maybe that it's time to reassess and go have some new conversations with them. And the final thought I'll close with is this. I kind of like this idea. We live, harsh, but we live in a sea of assessments about things we know nothing about. We are constantly assessing, often about people, areas, things that we aren't even a part of, that are not occurring, that are not happening in our day-to-day life, but that doesn't stop us from making assessments about it. And more dangerously, holding our assessments like they're the truth, like we're right, okay? It doesn't stop us from having opinions and often holding them as facts. And you know what they say about everybody has an opinion. So be well, take good care of yourself, assess gently yourself and others, and I look forward to talking with you again in future episodes. Well, my friends, that's a wrap for today. I'm so grateful you joined me, and hope you feel energized by the insights we took a deeper look at together. If anything resonated with you or inspired new thinking, drop me a note. I'd love to hear your biggest takeaway. Please join me next time as we dive deeper into this never-ending journey of self-discovery. Until then, be well, be present, live fully and authentically. Wake up and pay attention.